Welcome to the Business Bitcoinization Show, the show dedicated to helping you enrich your life and grow your business with Bitcoin, the hardest money on planet Earth. I'm your host, Josh Friedemann, and our guest today is Andy Schoonover, who's the CEO of CrowdHealth, which is revolutionizing the way people pay for healthcare. I'm sure you have a lot of questions about how he's doing that, and we'll get to that a little bit more right after this. Business owners, unlock the benefits Bitcoin has to offer your business with the Bitcoin for Business Quick Start Guide. This 27-page guide highlights the 6 ways you can grow your business with Bitcoin. Check it out in the show notes. Andy, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So I like to start off every single interview with a few questions that help us to get to know you a little bit better and give us some insight for our own lives. So you ready for these?
Bring it on.
All right. When and how did you first learn about Bitcoin?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a hard story because I learned of Bitcoin, I think, you know, 8 or 9 years ago in the very beginning, not the very beginning, but pretty close to the beginning. And I remember telling one of my good friends, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to put $10,000 into this new monetary thing that nobody really truly understands. But you know, it's a $10,000 flyer, and I think Bitcoin was at like $100 or something. It was somewhere between $100 and $1,000. And he talked me out. I was like, "This is dumb. This is not going to work," you know. And here we are at what, you know, $39,000 today or whatever. And I'm like, "Oh, if I had only." And I know that, you know, people listening to this, I think probably lots of folks have the same story. It's like, man, if I had only gotten in, you know, when I first saw this as being a good idea. I kind of went on my life doing a bunch of healthcare stuff and hadn't gotten kind of reacquainted with Bitcoin until, I don't know, probably a year ago. And I was sitting at lunch with a guy, Jimmy Song, who many Bitcoiners know. And he, as he says, orange pilled me. So I'm about a year into this Bitcoin journey. It's been fun to get to know the folks, and I think the most interesting thing to me is like the community around Bitcoin. You know, for a group of people who talk a lot about being sovereign individuals, it is pretty fantastic to see just the strong community of Bitcoiners. So they have welcomed me in and given me grace and been just, you know, totally up for educating me on what Bitcoin is and how it works and you know, why it will stand the test of time.
The next question is, what's an insight or fact about Bitcoin that you wish everyone understood?
Yeah, I think that for me, I was a little bit scared of it because I just didn't understand. And I thought going in, if, you know, we're always just as human beings, a little bit fearful of asking dumb questions. And so I think people who want to get into Bitcoin are going to find a community of people, like I just mentioned, that are just very willing to and excited to be teachers. You know, my grandpa always used to tell me there are times to be the teacher and times to be the student, you know, and some of us, especially who are, you know, older, have a tough time being students sometimes. But man, the Bitcoin community is incredible at answering questions and just being willing to educate. So it is not nearly as scary as you know, one would think it is, kind of looking from the outside in.
And I know you said you're pretty new to Bitcoin, but maybe because of that, this question will be even more helpful to people who are just starting to learn. And that is, what is the resource that you most recommend to other people when they're interested in learning about Bitcoin?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I went on Amazon and I just put the basics of Bitcoin because I wanted to at least have some kind of foundation. And so, you know, there's a bunch of books on Amazon for, you know, the basics of Bitcoin. You know, there's a bunch of podcasts that are, you know, Bitcoin friendly, like this one. You know, listen to a podcast like this one to learn the basics. And then, like I said, you know, you can reach out. Twitter is kind of the place where I feel like a lot of Bitcoiners hang out. You know, I think you could go on Twitter and find somebody who looks to be knowledgeable in this space and just reach out to them and be like, hey, you know, I got a question. And, you know, my bet would be that they would answer that without hesitation. So, you know, there's so many resources nowadays. I think, you know, Elon Musk, I think, recently said something like, there's nothing you can't learn for free on YouTube. And I think that's the case, right? And so my recommendation is go to YouTube and really try to decide for yourself. I mean, there's a lot of crypto options out there, but I think it's worthwhile to hear somebody, you know, make the case kind of for Bitcoin apologetics, if you will, because I think there's a great case to be made for, you know, Bitcoin truly being the future of the monetary system and not some of these other crypto related coins out there.
And I'm super thankful because I am fairly recent to Bitcoin as well. And I was so thankful for coming in, having so many great pieces of content, great resources, suggesting why Bitcoin is in a class of its own and mm-hmm. probably the only way to go, in my opinion, the only way to go. Sure. So I'm really thankful for that because back in the day, it, depending on when you entered in, all sorts of other things were out there. And today, I guess it's even more true than it's ever been. There's so many other possibilities out there, but Bitcoin is in a class of its own. And that's the sooner you figure that out, the better it is for you usually.
Yeah, agreed.
Question number four is this. Beyond Bitcoin, what's a resource or an idea that's been valuable to you or your business recently?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. And I think the idea that I'm kind of bouncing around in my head, and this is probably an unconventional one for you know, the people that you have on your show, but I'm trying to figure out, I got a small family, or, you know, a family with small kids. I have about a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, and, you know, a wife who likes me around, thank God. And a startup, which is, you know, another child of mine, right? And so I think a lot of the things that people deal with when, you know, they do a startup is how do you balance that time between family and startup? Because it is very, very easy to get totally engaged in what we're doing because we're just fired up about it. And oftentimes more fired up about our business than fired up about going home and dealing with a 3 and a 5-year-old who are kind of being 3 and 5-year-olds, right? And so, you know, for me, the idea here is like, how do you scale your time more effectively? And the two things that I kind of lean on is, as just a business owner is, you know, how do you get to that 80% rule? You know, we like to say that, you know, 80% is good enough to move on. Right? Like that remaining 20% takes so much time and is not nearly as valuable as that first 80%. So if we can get something to 80%, we go. And then we will iterate along the way. So that's one. That saves me a bunch of time at work so that I can get home with my family. Second is, you know, don't be a control freak. If you have to be involved in every decision that is made, that's going to take a ton of your time. And so if you can really delegate to people and find a really good team and be comfortable with the decisions that your team makes, I think it just opens up so much time. And I truly believe that my best ideas come when I'm walking my dog or playing with my kids in the backyard or wherever. It's somewhere outside of the four walls of the office. And so probably not the direction you thought I'd go with that, but it's just it is in my mind constantly as a, you know, a husband, a father, and a business owner. It's something that a lot of us, I feel like, struggle with.
I keep the questions open-ended because you never know what you're going to get. And I think business owners, people who are using their time well, people who are maxed out, they're looking for how to get that edge. And so if they can hear one thing from one person in one random podcast episode that can help them out, that could be it. So here's the final question. The final question we call our arbitrary but insightful question, and it's this. As a general life principle, is it better to ask why or why not?
Man, you know, it's a great question. Simon Sinek, you know, is the kind of master of asking why, right? And always to be the contrarian, I'm going to go with why not is the more important one. I think so many businesses, I know my business, was the result of a lot of people being like, there's no way that can happen, right? There's no chance that you can build something like that. And so my response is always, why not? You know, why not? Why can't it happen? Why not? And so, you know, I'm going to go with why not. because I think we have a lot of critics, you know, from the outside kind of looking in and saying, you can't do it, you can't do it, you can't do it. You can kind of look at some of the incredible innovations over the last, you know, decade. And I think a lot of people are kind of responded, why not? You know, so I'm going to go with why not.
If you were hit by a bus right now, could your family access your Bitcoin? When's the right time to stop hodling and use Bitcoin to impact your family's lives, not just yours? What if Bitcoin doesn't reach the value you expect, or it takes longer to reach that value? Do you have a plan? Do you have the proper trust structure to avoid probate, maintain your privacy, and minimize taxes? Do you want to avoid taxes to stack more sats or leverage your stack without selling? Should you add Bitcoin to your business's balance sheet? Are you truly confident in your self-custody setup? If any of those questions made you stop and think, you probably realize that simply buying and holding Bitcoin is not a complete financial plan. That's where Strong Wealth comes in. Orange-pilled advisors blending traditional financial planning with deep Bitcoin expertise, giving you the best of both worlds, so you can sleep peacefully knowing you're making the right moves for your family no matter what happens. Schedule a free call at strongwealth.net. That's strongwealth.net. Strong Wealth, wealth management for Bitcoiners by Bitcoiners. Today's episode of Business Bitcoinization is proudly brought to you by Velus Commerce, where the future of business technology meets Bitcoin. As we journey through the era of Bitcoin and its transformational impact on businesses, there's one name that stands out. Velus Commerce. Whether you're looking to build a cutting-edge website, a seamless mobile app, or custom software, Velus is your go-to team. They've been diving deep into the world of Bitcoin since 2014, making them one of the most experienced groups for integrating Bitcoin and Lightning payments into a variety of digital platforms. But here's what truly sets them apart. Velus Commerce doesn't just build. They bring a wealth of knowledge to ensure your project's success from day one. Their team understands the nuances of Bitcoin, ensuring that your business stays ahead of the curve. And for all business Bitcoinization listeners out there, Velus Commerce is offering a free consultation to kickstart your project the right way. So if you're ready to future-proof your business in the coming age of hyper-Bitcoinization, head over to veluscommerce.com or reach out on Twitter at Velus Commerce. Let's make sure your business thrives in the Bitcoin era. Perfect. All right. Well, Andy, I'm excited to talk to you about Crowd Health today.
Sure.
You are trying to change the way that people are paying for healthcare. Mm-hmm. I have listened to some other interviews out there with you, and if this resonates with people today, I would encourage people to look up Andy's name and hear a little bit more about Crowd Health. Today, we're going to be looking at it, at least to some degree, how it connects to Bitcoin. But but mainly, I think it's such a unique idea how to pay for healthcare in a way that doesn't essentially break people's banks. And to the point of its relevance, I was talking with a friend the other day who's a CFO of a nonprofit. And as soon as I mentioned this, he was asking questions that I didn't have answers for. But hopefully, we'll get some of those answers from you today. A little bit about Crowd Health and how it came about, the problems that you're trying to fix with Crowd Health.
Sure. Yeah, this is my second run at healthcare. My first one ended in 2014. I sold the company to a private equity firm, and I stuck around for a couple years. Rolled off of that, and like many Americans, I had my healthcare through my company. And so I rolled off of the company. I didn't have healthcare anymore, so I went over to healthcare.gov, thinking that was the only option. And got a plan from me, my wife, and my two kids. It was $1,200, and I kind of joke, it worked until I had to use it. My little one, who's one at the time, was having a recurring ear infection, so we went to the ear, nose, and throat doc, who told us that she needed tubes in her ears, so we went to the hospital. 15-minute procedure, got tubes in her ears, and the bill was $8,000. And I'm like, wow, $8,000 for 15 minutes. And, you know, people wonder why our healthcare system is broken. It was just egregious. And I was like, okay, well, at least I have health insurance. You know, they'll pay for this. Well, my health insurance provider came back and said it was medically unnecessary. And so they denied the claim. And I'm like, what? Hold on a second. My ear, nose, and throat told me that this would cure her ears. And by the way, it did cure her ears. She didn't have any recurring ear infections after that. And you're telling me it's medically unnecessary. And so I had to stroke an $8,000 check to the local hospital, and I was ticked. So I was like, all right, I'm going to quit. I'm not doing health insurance anymore. My family and I have been uninsured for the last almost 2.5 years now, and have built some tools around, you know, how do we viably operate outside of health insurance? And as I was mentioned, you know, earlier, people are like, oh, you can't operate outside of health insurance. And my response is like, why not? let's figure it out. And so Crowd Health was started a year ago. Actually, our birthday was last week, to really give people an alternative way to pay for their healthcare expenses outside of health insurance. And it's 50% less costly, and I can talk about why. And it's way easier to use, you know, no doctor's networks, no deductibles, none of that crazy stuff that you have with health insurance. And it's worked really, really well. So I was sitting down with, again, Jimmy Song, and he's like, man, you know, what would be awesome is the problem we have with health insurance is you're sticking money into a pool of dollars that's declining in value. And so what if you actually could hold Bitcoin in a decentralized risk pool as opposed to dollars in a centralized risk pool? I said, great idea. Let's figure out how to do this. And so we're going to be launching the service, kind of using Bitcoin as the fuel to do this, probably in the next 90 days. And you know, I can talk about kind of how the mechanics of all this, you know, work. But it's in essence, you are putting money into an account that is owned by you. Part of it's going to be kept in cash. The rest of it's going to be converted to Bitcoin. We're using a provider that most of the people on this podcast will know. It's a Bitcoin only provider to help us do this. I don't know. We'll let you know more about who that is probably in the next 30 days. But it really does give you access to healthcare at a significantly less cost. And if that Bitcoin that you have in your wallet goes up in value, that's yours. That's yours to keep. It's not an insurance company's. You know, the keys are in your name. And so that's really kind of important piece of this.
So there are multiple things you said here that are worth digging into a little bit. First of all, I think before we get to the Bitcoin side of things, I think it'd be interesting to know you mentioned that healthcare could cost up to 50% less. So maybe speak to that a little bit, what you can do. I feel like it's almost a double value proposition for people who really are into Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. You have Bitcoin involved here, and plus it's just kind of a better way of approaching things. So maybe talk about the 50% less side of things, and also maybe how you're differentiated slightly. So someone might hear this and be like, this sounds like just kind of a medical payment sharing service. So how is it different? And then also, how can you save some money with your approach?
Yeah, let me start with how do you save some money? I mean, it's interesting. People are really like confused by why healthcare is so high, right? Especially we pay twice as much per capita as any other country, and that country is Switzerland. And then it's like three times per capita the next one on the list. And so our system is set up so that the buyers of healthcare, which right now are health plans, and the sellers of healthcare, which is more and more hospital systems, both have an incentive for prices to go up. You know, the big lie in healthcare is that your health plans are negotiating on your behalf, and that's not actually the case. So there was in Obamacare, so I don't know, 10 years ago, they put in a part of that legislation that says health plans can only profit 15% of your premiums, right? And from the outside looking in, you know, that's like, oh, that's great. Like they can't, you know, fleece us with 30% profit margins or whatever. But if you think about it, these health plans are for-profit entities. So if you have a $1,000 premium, they can only make $150. So how do they make more money? Your premium has to go up. So, you know, at $1,000, it's $150 worth of profit. At $1,100, it's $165 worth of profit. And so they actually have an incentive for your premiums to continue to go up. And that's a perverse incentive. They are not acting on our best interest. So that's why healthcare is so expensive. And so they don't negotiate with the local hospital systems to the extent that they should. And therefore, folks like me and you can go into the hospital system and actually get better prices than the health plans. So right now we're getting about 50% discounts to what health plans are paying for any kind of large surgery. Give you a quick example. We had a member in Wisconsin who their local hospital was getting paid about $86,000 for this procedure that they needed from the health plan in their area. We found another hospital close to their home that would do it for $44,000. So it just went from 86 to 44, right? Just because we went and shopped around. we found another hospital that was in Oklahoma City, so 1,000 miles away, that was $22,000. So we have a price that is about, you know, 75% less, 1,000 miles away. And so that's how crazy our healthcare pricing structure is right now. And funny enough, we, you know, got them 2 first class tickets to Oklahoma City. We put them up in the nicest hotel in Oklahoma, and, you know, and they got their surgery, and they still saved, you know, $50,000 as a result of that. So in essence, you know, if you can, you can pay with cash and don't have to go through the health plan, doctors are willing to give you substantial discounts for doing that. So I think that answered your one question, is like, why, you know, why can we save so much? It's primarily because doctors and health systems don't like to bill health plans because they're hard to bill, and the health insurance plans can't really negotiate with the hospital systems, or they don't negotiate with the hospital systems. And so the prices are way inflated.
I'm curious how you think about this when it comes to the model of crowd health. Do you see this as reforming the insurance system over time, or doing away with it? Like, is this a new way of doing things where insurance is no longer necessary, or will this eventually change the value proposition of insurance for consumers?
Yeah, I mean, I think our vision is a post-insurance society. I mean, I think there are too many perverse incentives within the insurance space for it to be a viable long-term option to our healthcare needs. So ultimately, what's going to happen is it's going to get so bad that everybody's going to look at it and says, well, we should just have the government take it over, right? Like, that's the only viable option. It's going to be, the government's going to take it over, and these private companies are going to be administrators, you know, similar to the way they're doing for Medicare now, you know, and I think that's a really bad option. I think for several reasons, and we can get into them if you want to, but I think that's a bad option. And I think our option is much better cost, again, takes the insurance company out of the middle of the patient-doctor relationship, which right now, I mean, if you walk into your doctor's office, you might as well have a, you know, an insurance auditor sitting there in the room with you, you know, listening to the conversation, because they ultimately decide whether you can or can't get the care that you need. And that just is appalling to me.
So maybe the next direction to go, and this is kind of the question I asked a little bit earlier as the part two, is how do you differentiate yourself from other companies who are doing similar things besides the Bitcoin piece? Because that will be where we go next.
Yeah, sure. So let me talk about the mechanics of how this works. And I think it'll highlight that the answer to the question. So our members every month have submit money, dollars right now, into a bank account. The bank account is theirs. It's opened up when they join CrowdHealth. And then they use the money in that bank account to help others in the community when they have a big health event. So let's just use my ear tube example. You know, I would get a bill for $8,000 for my daughter's ear tubes. CrowdHealth would actually negotiate that on my behalf with the hospital. And typically we can get those down by about 50%. So that 8,000 would go down to 4,000. Schoonovers would be charged with 500, paying the first 500. And then the rest, the 3,500, would be then submitted to the community and say, hey, community, will you help the Schoonovers pay for their health bill? And this is more like crowdfunding. So what we asked you can give us a thumbs up or a thumbs down. I'm interested in helping the Schoonovers, or I'm not interested in helping the Schoonovers. It's totally voluntary. And if somebody says no, we'll just ask the next person, and, you know, we'll finally get it crowdfunded. That money is then transferred over to the Schoonovers bank account. I now have enough money to pay the hospital for that bill. The question then is like, okay, so why would I give money to the Schoonovers for their daughter's ear tubes, right? One primary reason is we actually have a reputation score internally. So if I continue to ask Andy or Josh for money, right, to help, and Andy or Josh say no, 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 we actually have that when you ask for a health event, right? So if you were to come to us and say, hey, I need help with a big expense that I have, and I look at you and you say, wait a second, you said no 80% of the time. So why would I give money to somebody in the community who's not a good member of the community? So it's a reputation score, you know, not too dissimilar from, you know, Amazon or eBay or whatever, right? You're going to support those who have really good reputations in the community. So that keeps people from, you know, being Scrooges. So that reciprocity engine is what really drives this. And that's very different than health insurance plans, clearly. It's way different than health shares that some people are familiar with. Health shares basically allocate it to you and say, hey, here's your person, you know, pay them. Or, you know, we will automatically do it internally. Few health shares have your own account. Here's one other big difference. If you leave CrowdHealth and you have money in your account, it's your account. It's your money. You take it with you. We have an exit fee to close out that account and stuff, but that's your money. We never touch it. We never take it. It's always in your control. And so that's a really big differentiator too between us and the health shares.
Now, maybe if you can go into a little bit more about how the Bitcoin part plays into all of this, mm-hmm. what you're looking to do, maybe long-term, how this plays out.
Yeah, sure. And so, you know, the idea here is that, you know, these big health insurance plans are keeping this, like I said, pool of risk. It's sitting there in dollars and it's just in case for the big stuff, right? And that pool of money, like literally, I mean, doesn't get any return. Any return on that money oftentimes goes to the insurance plan. Like they take that, you know, money as profit. So what we are thinking here is saying, hey, what if you could contribute dollars into an account? A part of those dollars are converted to Bitcoin and they just sit there in your wallet, right? Just in case. We all think Bitcoin is going up, right? So any appreciation of that Bitcoin, you own. Like you get that. That's 100% yours, 0% mine. I don't take any of that, mm-hmm. right? The other allocation is in dollars because I don't want you to sell your Bitcoin unless you really, really have to. Right. There's tax consequences of it. Nobody wants to sell their Bitcoin. You know, Michael Saylor stood up in front of Bitcoin 22 and said, don't sell your Bitcoin. Right. So we're trying to keep people from having to sell their Bitcoin unless there's, you know, something big that happens. And so the money that is in your account in dollars, you can then transfer between people to help them with their big accounts. The Bitcoin sits there just in case it appreciates over time. 100% of that is yours when you leave. And so that's what we're doing. It's the same infrastructure that we're currently using, the same processes. We're just allowing you to hold the capital that you have in your account in Bitcoin as opposed to fiat. And that's ultimately the difference. One other quick difference, and I think this is a kind of an important one, which is you're going to be in a group of people who are only Bitcoiners. So you will only be funding other Bitcoiners' health expenses. And so that affinity group is going to kind of be tied together. And we think because of that, people will take a lot more care in the healthcare that they consume. You know, it's easy to consume a bunch of healthcare when you don't know the person who on the other side who's getting impacted by this. But you know that the people getting impacted by your healthcare decisions are other Bitcoiners. And so we think that people will behave differently when that's the case. And plus, Bitcoiners, I don't know if you were at Bitcoin 22, but they are young. They're generally healthier than the population, you know, and so it's a pretty healthy group of folks to be, you know, funding their healthcare expenses. So we think there's some benefits there too.
Yeah, I was actually just writing a note about that with that low time preference thinking that Bitcoin tends to increase in people. Do you have any idea how healthy the people who are part of CrowdHealth are?
Yeah, we just ask them, are you super healthy or not healthy? And so you have to be like, okay, people are going to really be honest with you? Most people say they are super healthy, but if you start looking at the figures, our average age at CrowdHealth is 34.
Okay.
Their BMI is about 4 points lower than the national average. And so we've got, you know, and one of the reasons there is that, you know, if you're over 300 pounds, you know, that's the one of two reasons why we would not accept you to the community. So if you're over 300 pounds, we will not accept you to the community. The cost of somebody over 300 pounds is like 3 to 4x what it is somebody who is, you know, of average weight. So that's one. And then two, if you are a long-term smoker, we will not allow you in the community if you're a long-term smoker. So those are the two kind of key things. You know, people ask about pre-existing conditions. And so the way that we work with pre-existing conditions is like, hey, if you have a pre-existing condition, you are responsible for that, the cost of that in the first year. The community will share or fund 25,000 of that in the second year, 50,000 in the third year, and 100,000 in the fourth year and beyond. So this is a little bit like, you know, if you're going to be a part of the community, then you have to, you know, take your fair share of expenses. You can't just come in with, you know, $100,000 a year health expense and assume everybody else is going to pay for it. And so that's one of the things too that just keeps our population a little bit healthier.
How about organizations? Do you work with organizations, or will you work with organizations in their entirety, or is it still on a person-to-person basis? Obviously, there's going to be the caveats like the 300-pound, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, would you work with an organization, or would it have to be everyone within that organization comes to you as an individual?
Yeah, so I guess both. One is we work with organizations, and then the organization can, depending upon the size of the organization, if you're 50 people or more, there are some Affordable Care Act requirements and regulatory requirements there. If you're under 50 people, it's a lot easier. And we have an ability for you to offer, kind of a what's called a minimum essential coverage plan alongside what Crowd Health does. And so, you know, if you have an organization and are interested, I can kind of tell you within a 10-minute conversation whether we'd be a good fit for you.
Sure. Are there any other questions that I haven't asked that, especially in the Bitcoin conversation, would be helpful to uncover and discuss a little bit? Or is that pretty much everything as far as the basics go?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the basics. Right now what we're trying to do is recruit about 1,000 people to join, because there's kind of a viable place financially to do this. And so we have several hundred whoever they've signed up already. If you go to crowdhealthbtc.com, there's a sign up form, and it's just ask your name and your email and how many people in your family are interested. And once we get to 1,000, we're going to reach back out to those folks and say, hey, we're ready to roll. And then at that point, you can decide whether or not this is something for you. But if you're interested in hearing more about this, yeah, crowdhealthbtc.com. It'll give you a little bit of an overview of what we're doing and allow you to show some interest.
And that jogs my memory on a question that I had thought about earlier. Is this for Bitcoiners only, or do you have an element of your business that doesn't have the Bitcoin savings plan?
Yeah, so we've been running for a year now on the just the fiat side. So we're going to continue that because it's working so well. But we want a secondary, what we're calling a crowd of just Bitcoiners. So we will have two crowds, one who's a fiat and one is a Bitcoin. All the fiat will fund within that fiat group. All the Bitcoiners will fund within their Bitcoin group. So we're called Crowd Health. We're kind of calling it our second crowd that we're building. So, and we're thinking about doing this for, you know, trainers and real estate agents and a whole host of folks, and have, you know, half a dozen crowds who have an affinity for each other and hopefully, you know, change their behavior as such. So that's the long-term vision of the company.
Well, I love what you've shared today, Andy. Hopefully this will be something that helps people think differently about their own business, but also see the value in maybe working with Crowd Health. Where would people go? Maybe you've already shared one link, but any mm-hmm. other places, whether it's connecting with you or learning more about Crowd Health, if people are interested to learn more?
Sure. Yeah. We're on all the social media platforms. So, most of the Bitcoin folks engage with us on Twitter. So it's Join Crowd Health is our Twitter handle. Joincrowdhealth.com is our main page if you're interested in the fiat version or just learning more generally about what we're doing and how we're doing it. That's a great page to get some resources. And then Instagram too, if you're over there, it's Join Crowd Health. So would love for y'all to join us. I think you'll especially in the Instagram side find our account pretty fun and a little bit different than your typical healthcare company. So we try to keep it light over here. But would love for anybody who's interested to join us.
Andy, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
All right, friends, it's a wrap. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Business Bitcoinization Show. If you want to reach out, our email is info@bizbitshow.com. Also, if you haven't done so yet, go ahead and scroll on down to the show notes. There you'll find ways to connect with me and our guest, as well as our excellent sponsors who can help you succeed in your life and in your business. Keep building, keep growing, and until next time, keep living and leading well.